All right, everyone. We got a very special guest in this episode. His name is Eric Enge. And yeah, Eric, welcome to my show. Welcome to Campus Link Building and SEO Podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks, Christoph, for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
So, Eric, you've been around in the industry for how long and what's your background? How did you start?
Oh my, well, I've been around for over 20 years in terms of SEO stuff. So I guess I'm one of those moldy oldie guys. I'll be honest, I'm not young, Christoph. You can see the gray in the beard.
And, oh, you just turned 30, huh?
Yeah.
I'm here too, so.
I actually had a considerable career before I got involved in SEO. But it was always involved in technical and marketing stuff and kind of the combination of those two things. So SEO is kind of a comfortable spot for me. I love doing it because one moment I'm a wild-eyed marketer and the next moment I'm in nitty-gritty coding details.
Mm-hmm. So you don't shy away from technical tricks and crazy redirect chains and red canonicals and that stuff.
By no means. We have fun doing lots of stuff here. We'll get right into how to code AMP pages or what does it take to build an action on Google for Google Home or, let's do it kind of attitude.
Okay. So how do you, Eric, you wrote that book Out of SEO or you helped write it, with co-authors in three editions, I think, right?
Yeah, three editions so far. Yep.
Wow. So you're the godfather of SEO for some, maybe. Let's step aside for a moment and think about, how would you explain SEO or online marketing or search marketing in general, with search engines and websites being complex concepts for some already? How would you explain that to your neighbors or, your dentist?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is, we're in the business of trying to help people get more traffic from Google. And as part of that, you have to start with the understanding that the rankings you see in Google aren't by definition the best results in that Google could potentially serve. They're not human curated by experts. Rather, they're determined by algorithms. And those algorithms are pretty good. So the results are, generally speaking, pretty good. But the actual final order is largely determined by people who do a better job of optimizing for Google and understanding what it is that Google's looking for and giving them that. Ultimately, what people like you and me do, Christoph, is we try to help people actually do that better. So they fare better in Google overall and their business can grow as a result.
Okay, and now I put on the hat and play your neighbor and tell you that I actually signed up for this thing with Google and gave them my credit card for $100 and I was on number spot immediately. What are you trying to scam me for? What's the deal here? I bought myself on top of Google and I'm there. What are you talking about algorithms? I cracked it with $100 on my credit card.
Paid search is a great way to get into Google. So what I should have clarified in my description is we work on the part of the search results you can't pay to get into. Mm-hmm. And we call those the organic search results. And they're a kind of editorial result as determined by an algorithm. Mm-hmm. But there is a part, which is how Google makes their money. Their AdWords program where you can actually pay for placement. And those are the clearly marked things that happen above the regular organic search results that you can't pay for. And then, it's really useful then if you can put up a picture and show, see, here's a search result in this section here. These are the ads. And here's the stuff that you can't pay for.
Okay. So, and because you said they're clearly visible as ads, I think that changed over time as well, right? What's your opinion on that? I mean, it's...
Right. There's sort of a fine line between, what are their disclosure obligations in terms of whether something is an ad or not. versus you know, what can they do to enhance the click-through rate on things. Mm-hmm. You know, clearly when you do a search result, you can get things that show up that, okay, it does say that it's an ad, but a user who doesn't look carefully at it might not recognize that. And there's that little fine line that they have to walk. And sometimes that ad marketing isn't so strong and obvious as you might think it would be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's the deal? You know, what do you explain next when you talk about optimizing? Does it have to do with, you know, putting the same word over and over in the place, or, you know, better videos, better images, all this social stuff that we're doing here, Instagram, Facebook, everyone's on there. Everyone promises, you know, the golden egg on social. Does that matter?
I mean, to me, when I think of search ranking and how to do effective SEO, I think of two things. All right. I really should say three things. But I'll give the two things and then I'll give you the third after.
Okay.
Content. Mm-hmm. Links. Mm-hmm. Those are the first two. Mm-hmm. Where you have to have good content that is really well structured for users. Mm-hmm. And addresses their needs very well on the page. And that's kind of an entry point. If you don't have that, then you're not even relevant to a query, right? And so if your query is, I don't know, Federal Reserve rate hike, which would be a very American query, something that we might search on here in the United States. You know, you have to like make it obvious that that's what you're talking about on your page, right? Or else you won't rank. Yeah. Doesn't help to repeat the same word over and over and over again. In fact, if you do that too much, it can hurt you. Mm-hmm. Google really wants you to give stuff that is really a quality result for users, right? Mm-hmm. The second part, the links part, is really about the number one ranking factor. There you go. Give me
I just pulled it up here.
Yeah.
Pulled it up here on the screen.
They're still a really big deal. And so let's just explain to people briefly what that's about. Mm-hmm. Links are about establishing who the most authoritative answer to a given question is. So we'll go back to what I just said. So I have a web page about Federal Reserve rate hikes, right? Well, guess what? There's probably 3,237 other pages about Federal Reserve rate hikes. And Google somehow has to figure out which one goes first and which one goes second and so forth. Excuse me. And links play a big, big role in that because they act like these editorial endorsements to say, oh, this article is the most important article on that topic. And that is really why links are such a big factor, because Google needs somehow to sort it out. Mm-hmm. And links are what do that.
But can't Google just read it and find the best article? I heard this a lot in 2015, maybe a little bit of 2016. People were all, you know, enrages and how, you know, Google did this little test of ranking something without links. And somehow this piled up as this huge hype that, you know, links wouldn't be necessary, wouldn't be required anymore. What's your background, or what how did you see that, or what's your explanation how that happened? Because the way you explain it, it seems obvious. Of course, you have a website, you have multiple websites, and there are some connections between these websites. And, you know, basically every kid knows that because it's been like that for like 20 years. So how would a huge amount of our industry, at least, I'm not sure about the general public, but how would a huge number of people in our industry assume that, you know, links could be taken out without, you know, any impact on that?
There's a huge amount of people in our industry that ascribe to nearly any myth. So a lot of careful testing and examination is really required to understand how things work. But let me give you a really good, what I think is a good, clear explanation of why links play such a big role. It is the only signal available on the web where someone who owns an asset called a website can basically say that this other page over here is so important to me. It's so important to me to give this value to my users on my site that I'm willing to have this person leave my site to go see it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is no other signal like that on the web where someone has had such a strong endorsement. Keep in mind, everybody with a website has a purpose. They have a business purpose. They want to accomplish something.
Right.
And yet it's so important to me to link to this other thing because I think it's so important to the users on my particular page that it adds value to my page to take the risk that users are going to leave my site and go to someone else's site. By the way, that doesn't happen in social media. Social media, it's everything I post on social media, I might share someone else's article.
Yeah.
It's gone from your Twitter feed in 10 seconds.
Right, right. Right.
So, someone might leave their Twitter stream, just to use Twitter, it could be Facebook, could be Instagram, could be whatever. They might leave their stream, which isn't mine anyway. They're not on my site. They just see a tweet from me. They click on it. They're gone. By the way, in that case, they're not really leaving my property. They're continuing to get value from me without my giving anything up. It's only in the case of a website where I'm giving up a potential customer to send them to another page. There's no statement that powerful available anywhere else on the web, period.
Right. And you're basically losing the opportunity to sell that person or to close that person or to get any additional value. You might lose that person forever if he leaves your website with that link. So my investment in sending you someone via a link, if I link to you, is actually a big one. And I need to have a very, very legit reason, a very important reason for that. That's what you're saying.
And no, that's exactly right. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, the thing is that this is what people lose sight of when they say, oh, links are going to go away as a ranking signal. Oh, it's been spammed too much, whatever. I mean, and there are definitely issues with people doing spammy things with links. Don't get me wrong. But Google has made huge strides in that over the past 5 years and gotten very, very effective in their ability to detect problems. It's not just a decent signal. It's actually the best signal they have. And there is nothing in the ecosystem that can replace that. So let me give you the counter. Someone's going to say, okay, user engagement with my web pages. That'll be the next thing someone says. Uh-huh. And by the way, I have no doubt that Google is finding ways to make user engagement a part of the algorithm.
Right.
But let's also understand that there are many cases where things like a very short visit to your site is a positive signal. So if somebody says Stone Temple Consulting phone number in Google, and let's say Google doesn't serve it directly in the results, and they land on my homepage, and they get the result, and they're gone in 3 seconds, and they're on the phone calling us, that's actually the indication of a good result.
Right, right.
So you can't just look at things like time on site or bounce rate. Those signals, in certain contexts, probably could be used certain ways, but there's so many ways that they get very, very messy. And this issue with user engagement signals has even been confirmed by people like Jeff Dean, the guy who's the senior architect of their entire machine learning program at Google, has basically spoken negatively about, trying to dynamically rank results based on user engagement with search results. So, not saying they're not finding ways to use these things. I'm sure they are, but they're messy signals.
For some industries, for some countries, for some languages, for some parts of industries, I'm sure this is true. I think what you're touching on is a little bit that we are as online marketers, or maybe we as humans try to keep it simple or want to keep it simple or try to generalize on things and concepts, while Google is a system that should serve what trillions of combinations for markets and reasons and intent, search intents, and still only have what 10 or even less search results as the best search results. So I think whatever you look at, whatever someone looks at, unless you have a huge sample of different verticals, different industries, there's no way that mankind can actually try to reverse engineer what the Google machine learning thing is doing with the signals, with noise in this one or this other vertical, right?
Yeah, no, it's an incredibly hard problem. You're talking about one of the largest companies by market cap on planet Earth, with the largest database and server infrastructure ever constructed in the history of mankind. Right. What I actually consider probably is likely the most impressive technological achievement in the history of mankind, the Google's infrastructure and what it does.
Right.
So, you know, it's just because I have a feeling that something might work a certain way, doesn't mean that it does.
Right, right. And it gets more complex, I think, over the years. When I started in 2003, there were a couple hacks, you know, like buying a really strong site-wide link from a newspaper and getting rankings basically overnight, because none of these anti-spam, anti-link buying filters were in place. And Google wasn't aware of people like us, you know, trying to game, trying to manipulate the search engines and, you know, making money with that, right? I think over the years, Google just understood its own power and influence to, well, not only understood, but grew its influence, which comes with a responsibility then as well, right?
It absolutely comes with a great deal of responsibility. That brings its own challenges, of course. You know, balancing that responsibility with a commercial enterprise, public company, and all that is a tricky, tricky process.
Yeah. Let me ask you about, you know, you're in the US. I'm not sure if you encountered what went on for the last 5 years with the European Union against Google, with their anti-competitive behavior. And EU finally slapping something on Google, giving them a $2.5 billion penalty for anti-competitive behavior and applying some measures and rules that Google actually needs to go back and prove that they changed something. How do you see that move? Is that a bold move? Is that something that doesn't hurt them? Your opinion here as an expert.
Well, I mean, I think they're definitely, I mean, anytime a company gets that large, right, and has as many products as they have, right, it's going to raise questions, right? I mean, this happened with Microsoft too, right? Microsoft was bundling Internet Explorer as the default browser with their operating system. And then they got slapped with a fine, which, by the way, they do again today. So I'm not sure what happened with all that. But
I'll tell you in a moment. I'll tell you in a moment what happened to Microsoft.
Okay. Yeah? But then, you know, Google, you know, they have the world's largest search engine, and it's even bigger market share in Europe in general, you know, outside of Czechoslovakia, basically, and European Russia. It's, you know, the dominant search engine, right?
Right, right.
By far. They have the world's number one browser, the world's number one phone operating system, the world's number one analytics package, the world's number one display ad network. And, you know, like, this is a lot of power.
Yeah.
And it's natural for there to be a lot of interactions between those things and ways that you could be. And then, you know, this thing is really about over pushing their shopping results, right? I mean, that's what the fine is about, but which isn't even that successful a program for Google in the grand scheme of things. I mean, the issues are going to come up, right? I mean, so, you know, is Google over the line? To be honest, I don't know that I have a well-formed opinion as to whether they're being, anti-competitive. They haven't had that issue here in the States, where evidently the rules are a little bit more lax. But
right.
I mean, is it an issue? Yeah, they're really big.
Yeah. No, from my point of view, you know, I've even been on national TV here in Austria talking about, they invited me as the Google guru again, because I've been here on national TV again. So I can cross off my bucket list, go on national TV with an orange jacket. But ask me about my opinion, you know, what that means for Google. And despite this took 5 years to develop, I was surprised that they came to ruling at all, number one. I was surprised by the big amount of money they're asking for. But the third thing surprised me the most. And this is the kicker for me. And also the answer to your question before, what happened to Microsoft? What happened to Microsoft was that they were forced to ask the user if he wants Internet Explorer or not. And since then, we have this, hey, would you like to use Internet Explorer as your standard browser or not? And of course, and it goes like, would you like to use Internet Explorer, okay, or cancel? And everyone clicks okay all the time. This is how they got out of the 2004 ruling. And that's all about. That's, they comply with everything the EU did against them back then, including the fine or something like that. And the third important point here regarding Google was that the EU actually asks Google to prove that they are less anti-competitive, that their competitors actually benefit from their action, that they basically take a step back and make less money. So the EU not only takes the money, the fine, but actually wants Google to prove that they earn less in the future. And for every day where they don't prove that, they are allowed to charge them a percentage of their annual profits, I think. Like big money. So this move alone shocked me. What I'm really looking forward to, and I think that's going to happen, I don't know. I'm not sure about the exact timing. There is some response, but not a lot. If I were Google, of course, you can fight it. You can pay a lot of, you know, attorneys to fight all that and stretch it another couple of years. But if I were Google, I might maybe look at this as a Europe tax. The tax for doing business in Europe is X percent from the money, you know, with the special tax systems exploits. Google didn't pay any taxes anyways in Europe for the last 10 years. So if they now pay whatever, 5%, they still pay 50% less than I do. No, sorry. What? No, the average entrepreneur pays 50% of his money. So if Google doesn't pay 50, but 5%, that's not a bad position to be in and not bother at all with all of that system. And so I'm curious to see how that develops and if, you know, Google seriously considers that as more of a tax burden than anything else and just continue their game.
Yeah, well, they could. That's certainly an option because of the cost to having a different infrastructure for Europe and for US is not small. That's a big cost, and that might actually be more expensive than dealing with the tax.
And, you know, complying with it would mean to basically change something in the business model. Whatever the business plans, the roadmaps, all these plans are, we don't have any insight in that. And they're moving fast. They're moving a lot faster than most of us, or at least as the government. So just letting someone tamper with that roadmap and these plans has some costs attached to it that I'm...
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a really big deal on that. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what happens on that space, in that area. Eric, I think we're a little bit over time now. You know, I wanted to have this 5 or 10 minutes, and I think we need to cut out a little.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. We've been going a long time. Yeah.
No, it's good. I enjoy it a lot. And, you know, what I usually ask in these podcasts or videocasts now is a takeaway, an immediate takeaway for our listeners or viewers. Do you have something, you know, like this, do this, get up tomorrow in the morning and do this, and then you will have that, you know, like a get rich quick trick and stop working tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I don't know if this is a get rich trick because I think usually my advice to a question like that comes out is learn how to promote, right? And even if you're already pretty good at promoting, learn how to get better at it. And even if you're great at it, learn how to get better at it still. Because whether it's links or something else, and right now it is links, and you know what, it ain't bad English. It ain't changing soon, which is in good English, it isn't changing soon. I usually use slang when I'm emphasizing. You've always in business had to be good about creating visibility for yourself. And you know, what does that mean in the world of SEO? It means prominent media and blogger attention, and finding the right people to partner with, working with influencers. So none of those are really get rich quick schemes, but if you do them really, really well, they're get rich certainly schemes. And I like those.
Yeah. So what you're saying is basically don't stop learning, don't stop hustling. There's no reason, no point in time where you just stop, right? And settle, you know?
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
It's good advice.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a great takeaway, I think, anyways, from you. And thank you very much for this. If you have any last words, a final statement, now would be a great time to do that. Wave hands to mom or something like that.
Thanks for having me on. I think this is a great time to be alive in digital marketing. It still is. It's not the same. It was 20 years ago when you could do almost anything and rank high in Google. But there are so many things happening in digital marketing between mobile, between things like Amazon Echo, which I know is available in Germany, at least. Is it available in Austria as well? excuse me. Personal assistants. Google Assistant and Cortana and stuff like that. So many things happening that really smart people who are willing to do the right things, there's just a ton of opportunity.
Right.
So it's kind of expanding on my prior comment. Embrace the learning, find the right opportunities for you and go for it.
And go for it and never stop.
You awesome. Got it.
Awesome. Okay. That was an awesome interview. Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you, Christoph.
Having you, and hope to have you soon again.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Okay. Good.
All right.
Everyone. Bye. Bye-bye.
Yep. Cheers. Bye, everyone.